You always need to make sure that the flipper is making more than you as a lender. Because, you know, per hour, the lender makes the most, but, you know, net, the flipper makes more. They should make more. It's a lot of work. But whenever that equation flips where the lender is making more than the flipper, you know, that's not a deal that you want to do.
You're listening to the Appraiser Secrets Podcast with your host, Mark Jackson. You will get straightforward advice for how to make a profit on every new transaction that you do, compounding your net worth and growing your wealth substantially all through real estate. Get more information at appraisersecrets.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Appraiser Secrets Podcast powered by Investor Comps. My name is Mark Jackson, you call me MJ. Great to have you with us for this next episode. Our very special guest, Dr. Stephen Hatcher. Stephen, how are you today, man?
Great, MJ. How you doing today?
Good, 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 man. Thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us, without a doubt. I know you've got a lot of great information to share. We want to just welcome you here to this episode. You know, one of the things that we really focus on at Appraiser Secrets by Investor Comps is this idea that you want to make sure that you do and acquire property at the right value and that you know the after repair value so you can always make a profit when you buy. I'm really excited to have Steve with us because he's had a measure of success going from professional practice, which he still is professional practice, but also adding some significant real estate to his portfolio and his business activity. I know for a fact you're going to enjoy hearing the things he has to share. So continue to subscribe, come and be part of our community as we continue to share VD's podcast and our live events as well. And let's just get into it. Steve, we've known each other for a couple of years now. We still have yet to get that round of golf, and I know we've got some dates. We've penciled on the schedule this year so we can I can make my way over to Greensboro. We can get on the links. Both of our passions, whether it's getting our clubs refitted or getting a new set of clubs or getting on some really unique and special courses. But let me share with folks just a little bit about you. Without a doubt, one of the things I admire most is that you are a veteran, having done military service after going to college and getting your dental degree, wound up serving in the military and actually getting a number of different distinctions while doing that. But also in terms of being a husband and a father and good professional practice owner, you also had some really great successes in doing multifamily. But also while serving in the military, received a number of different awards. And folks, this is important. Even in school, Steve successfully was able to achieve status on the dean's list at UNC Chapel Hill, was commissioned a captain in the U.S. Army, also received recognition and scholarship as U.S. Army health professional, then earned two Army commendation medals while serving and the Army Achievement Medal to go along with that. But then got into practice, was looking at, you know, what are our plans ahead? And therefore, started working with multifamily, got involved with some syndications, and also has a really great business partner, Joseph Goslin, who's helped him do an acquisition of a collaboration deal in the Lubbock, Texas market, which has been very successful. Steve also is involved in doing some angel investing with starter companies and even including a laser entity. So without a doubt, got your hands in a number of things, have been diligent in your education, in your service to the country, and to your clients and patients, but also your investing partners as well. Again, Steve, thank you so very much for being here. If you would, I realize there's probably a really unique background to share in terms of how you came to dentistry. So share a little bit about that and then how you wound up started doing real estate. Why did that become part of your background, your endeavors as compared to just staying in professional practice?
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. And great to be here. It's funny you should ask me that question because I was journaling the other day. That's one of my new habits in 2019 as I journal. every day. And, you know, when I was journaling the other day, I realized why I went into dentistry.
Yes.
And my father was, both of my parents, I have very humble beginnings. Both my parents were blue collar and they worked a lot, you know, in the factory. My dad worked doubles on Saturday and Sunday, you know, so working Saturday and Sunday, you know, 16-hour shifts, you know, he got paid instead of time and a half, he got paid double. And he was a man of practicality, so he put a lot of emphasis on providing well for his family. We had a lot of great memories, and he's my hero, and he's a great father figure. But one of the things that was, you know, lacking was time with family. So I knew when I grew up, I wanted to choose a profession, and education was, you know, really important in our family. I wanted to choose a profession that would allow me to have free time. I did have a family to be able to do nice things with the family and create, you know, lasting, you know, memories with the family. That's sort of how I got into dentistry. But he also was a successful real estate investor. He had, you know, at one point up to 20 single families, you know, at one point.
Okay.
And I remember, you know, when tenants would move out and there was CapEx and that sort of thing, like I was the CapEx. You know, my brother and I, you know, we'd go to the house and we'd have to fix things up and, you know, doing the yard and paint and, you know, being on roofs and that sort of thing. But at a, you know, early age, I realized, you know, when you have, you know, a single house, you know, a single tenant, you know, one tenant moves out and then there's no one paying the mortgage for you.
Mm-hmm.
So then I always kind of knew that, you know, someday, I didn't know how, but someday I knew I wanted to, you know, have my hands in some type of commercial property.
There you go. So what was that first? Now, did you jump in and say, I'm going to just work with someone and let them guide me? Or did you actually decide that, look, I want to get some education about this first and then go? What was your path to getting involved in doing multifamily?
Well, you know, I remember one of the first books I read that I think every real estate investor reads is called The Purple Book, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And, you know, all the concepts, you know, that makes sense, you know, getting most people that are dentists or doctors, you know, think they're, you know, they own their own business, but really their business owns them. But, you know, it was really, I just got lucky. One of my patients was a developer after the crash, and, you know, he was doing a project.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, doing development is the ultimate value add when you add value to dirt. But, you know, we put some, you know, pulled some money together in a syndication, which is a group of investors.
Mm-hmm. The
property was, you know, stabilized a couple of years later after it was built and permitting and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, 90%+ occupancy. Then we got a refinance and we got, you know, close to half of our capital back, our original capital back, tax-free. And then I just kept rolling that money, recycling that money over and over into other projects. And
okay.
Then one day I looked up and I was like, wow, I own a small percentage of several, you know, multi-million dollar deals. And it was just a lot of it was just from, recycling that money.
There you go. Now, it sounds like, and if I can go this way, and Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a great book. For those that are listening to this podcast, certainly you can affirm the same. And for those that maybe haven't been introduced to it, go grab a copy, whether you get a hard copy ordered through Amazon, have it come to your door, or whether you get it on Audible. It is a great foundational book to help you guide through the processes, the thought processes that go along with the building and understanding the difference between Rich Dad and the Poor Dad. It's really a unique story and lays out some principles to operate from. So I'm going to ask you the question, when you think about reading that book and the path that it's, you've been journaling as well, so that this may even come up, but what was the chapter or the phrasing or just a concept that really sets you on the path? Hey, I know that I need to do real estate and do it at a level where I'm not just doing it one time, but repeating. What was that chapter or thought that you got out of Rich Dad Poor Dad that set you on your way?
I remember there was a story when he was talking about, you know, living a conservative lifestyle and your home being a liability, your personal home being a liability and not an asset,
mm-hmm.
and then having other rental houses or multifamilies pay for, the home that you live in. I mean, oh, that kind of makes a lot of sense. And I used to get into arguments, philosophical arguments with my dad, because he would always say a home is an asset, and I would read the book and like, oh, that's really a liability. That really kind of struck me. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It does. I mean, even to the term of just say there's a new piece of equipment, or we can break it all the way down to the point, okay, you want to take a trip. You don't want to have to look at, how much income do I have to earn and save up to go to that trip. Let those other assets produce the income for you to be able to go and do some of the things that are more enjoyable in life, as compared to, what are hard assets or what I have to do. How many hours do I have to put in to be able to go take that vacation? It's a different way to think about it. But let me ask this, Steve, because you took a very unique path of transitioning your folks into retirement. Kind of share a little bit about what you were able to do with your real estate activity that was allow you to be a significant blessing to mom and dad.
Well, my mom is very very risk averse, and
mm-hmm.
Over time, the stock market goes up and down, and you really don't have any control over the stock market. You just don't know. And they had a considerable amount of savings in their IRAs. And unfortunately, my dad ended up he's got pretty bad dementia.
Okay.
And so I ended up taking over for my parents their financial affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Mom's like, son, I just don't want to take a lot of risk. I don't need super big returns. I just want safe returns. And everything that I've learned and everything I know, I was like, okay, so I took their money out of the stock market casino, a self-directed IRA, and did lending with it, generating conservatively, 8 to 10%, and that's going to meet their goals.
Yeah.
For them, and it's secured and insured first position, mainly working class homes where, your margin of safety, if you ever had to take the home back, you could rent it out, and the lender's always in the best position. So that's pretty gratifying. So what I've enough income is generated out of their IRAs monthly. My mom's still holding on, but when the time does come for him to go into a memory unit, I'm generating enough that it's not going to affect their lifestyle one bit, and he'll be able to go right, into a memory care.
There you go. And I think that's just real unique in, having gotten the education that you did. And some of it started obviously with your dad and the rental properties and helping, be you and your brother being that CapEx. So there wasn't, other than materials, there wasn't a whole lot of labor costs to keep those things going. But seeing the dynamics between having one door and one tenant and having one door, one roof with 50 or 100 tenants and what that's meant for you. You talked a little bit about syndication. You talked a little bit about private lending, okay? And so I want to delve into those just a little bit more, and we'll stick with the private lending side, because those are going to be deals that, don't take a whole lot of money. We're not talking about millions of dollars. We're talking about, tens of thousands or maybe $100,000 doing some of that private lending. When you're engage with someone that you're maybe going to do some private lending with? What are the things, if you're going to just share with everybody so they have the one or two or three things that really make the difference for them if they're going to do some lending, if they've got, you know, a little bit of money in a self-directed IRA, or, you know, they just started to build up $10,000 or $20,000 in savings, just getting started. What are the things that you look for that are important to you when you decide that I'm actually going to do some lending with an entity or with an individual, whatever it case may be? What are those things that drive your decision process?
Two of the most important things is the borrower and the market, you know, where it is in the market.
Okay.
I really shy away from California, you know, have zero interest in California.
Okay.
I try to, in general, be in, you know, boring markets. You know, in general, you're like your sweater, your red sweater, you know, red states are usually, you know, a little bit more business friendly than the blue states. But, you know, in working class things, so that if something, you know, bad were to happen, that, you know, you could rent it out at roughly 1% of, you know, the after repair value if you, you know, if you had to. And you would never had to, you know, take back a property and don't intend to. But, you know, those are things, you know, those are things that you want to look at. It's like, okay, well, you know, after this rehab, you know, you always got to look at your, you know, your outs and your margin of safety. You know, what if the market corrects? You know, so like in the, you know, if the $150,000 house, if the market goes down and they can't sell it for $150,000, and you know, you could probably rent something like that for $1,200 or $1,300, and hold you over until the market looked better. You know,
yeah.
So look at margin of safety.
There you go. You make a really good point because, and thank you for sharing that. Those two dynamics: the borrower and then the market area. And you know as well as I do, we talk about the market. It's the ones that make sense for us. California is a dynamic market in a number of different ways, but it's for the operators and the investors that know that market and know it very well. It's typically one of those where you really want to have boots on the ground or be there as compared to maybe doing it from a distance. But here's the thing. When you talk about, and this is really important for all the listeners, when we talk about value, notice what Steve said. When you're looking at a deal, especially one where you're going to be in it for less than the full market value, you still want to know your lending amount is going to be at no less than about 1% of the rent. So if you're in that property for $100,000, you want to know that you're bringing in about $1,000 a month rent or more. It is going to be the likely case. So taking a valuation first approach, knowing how much the property is worth, what it was acquired for, how much you're going to be in it as a lender, and then what the potential after repair value is very important. But the other part of it, if you didn't hear Steve clearly, I want to lay this out, is the house never knows how much it's worth. It just knows what it will rent for. So even when a market does make an adjustment, and we've seen that for some of you that are on here, you may have seen one or two different market shifts. Some of you may be looking for the first market shift to come so you can get that experience under your belt. But overwhelmingly, these pieces of real estate, whether they're multifamily or single family or quads or duplex, whatever it could be, they rarely, if ever, have any idea, okay, what they're worth. They just know what they will rent for. And so when you're positioning yourself as a private lender, knowing the value of what those market rents are going to be, are going to be the real key for any type of long-term hold asset that all you're looking to do is for it to continue to produce income over time. So, Steve, when you talked a little bit about red states, okay, you talked about, you know, market areas that really define it for you. Delve a little bit more into the borrower or the persons that you engage with. What are the things you look for in terms of dialogue, track record, stuff like that, that rounds out that other part of where you do your private lending?
I like boring markets and someone with a full, you know, with a full team, you know, from, you know, the marketing team for the lead generation, you know, rehab, you know, the whole, they need to be doing this for a living. You know, I want to deal with professionals. I don't want, you know, to deal with some dentist that, you know, watched HGTV and thinks that they can go do a, you know, go do a flip, because when you're a flipper, time is money, you know, so you gotta get that property rehabbed and, you know, back on the market, quickly. So, you know, that's really, you know, really key, you know, in my you know, my criteria when I'm, you know, when I'm looking at.
There you go. So
the other thing I would add is that you always need to make sure that the flipper is making more than you as a, as a lender. Because, you know, per hour, the lender makes the most, but, you know, net, the flipper makes more. They should make more. It's a lot of work. But whenever that equation flips, where the lender is making more than the flipper, you know, that's not a deal that you want to do.
Very good point. That's a significant point to make. And especially from your perspective, it's what you're looking at outwardly on the deal as compared to just inwardly and what you're going to make, and that's it. Very significant point. One of the things I enjoy about our engagement, relationship we've had, you've always been this individual that's willing to share thought process, a new book, something to help me or those that you engage with to expand and grow their mind. Let's talk a little bit about how you develop that mindset that is, you know, that has a sense of abundance, that is looking outwardly rather inward. Talk about how you evolved into that, if you don't mind, please.
You know, a lot of it was from my my business coach, which was Bill Blashford, and he taught me how to run a practice better from a business standpoint. And so then that exposed me to Strategic Coach and Dan Sullivan and Lee Brower and, you know, a lot of things on, you know, mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I learned, there's tons of things I learned, but you really have to be careful about your thoughts because, and this even goes back to the Bible, but, you know, your thoughts lead to actions, which leads to behavior, which leads to character. And everything starts with the, you know, the thought. And so I've read a lot of books, you know, like Tony Robbins, Dan Sullivan's books, Jim Rohn, you know, just really I've spent a lot of time in self-development, you know, 5 inches between my ears, you know, really trying to hone in on, you know, my mindset and how I think about things. Our creator created abundance. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of people are, you know, nervous and they think that, you know, all the good deals, you know, but you can partner with people and, you know, sometimes I'll introduce people to private lending that are a little nervous. And I think it's great because it's done a lot of great things for our family. And I'll say, look, I'll partner with you on this deal and just so you can see what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll set you free, you know, and so we'll be on there. How much you got? You know, I'll just round it out, you know, to the note, for the rest of it.
And yeah.
So I'm just trying to bring more people, you know, into this world.
Exactly. That's a good way. And I love that share in terms of mindset, this idea of thinking, having a coach, having a business coach is very, 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 very important. It's done a significant amount for you, but even this idea of managing your thoughts, which drive your actions, which creates your character and behavior. I think I got those in the right order. Those are great shares for everybody that's listening. And without a doubt, you can see how that linear progression happens starting with the thoughts, because that's one thing that you mentioned Bible. I'll go ahead and say, you know, if we think about our higher power, we're only given one thing that we have control over. We don't have control over breathing and sleeping and, you know, when we get tired and, you know, we get hungry. There's nothing we have control over other than our thoughts. But it's the most significant thing that we can have control over because we get to choose our actions, okay? And, again, that's always going to be what? Based on our thoughts, which means you always have to be careful protecting our eye gate and our ear gate, you know, what's coming in, what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're reading, so that we can frame up the life that we want to have rather than the one that's imposed upon us. I heard a quote earlier today that was from Warren Buffett. And we talk about, you know, what's happening with the economy and how we're going to position ourselves. We want to be mindful that we're not the ones out spending money on the things that we want, because we could use up our resources and then be in a day where we have to sell the things that we wanted to get what we need, like shelter and food. And that was Warren Buffett. I'm not quoting it exactly, but that was the framework of what he shared. And it's a thought process that we want to have as we go forward in life. And you've got this mindset down pat, Steve. Let's talk a little bit just as we go. We got a little bit more time here, about another 10 minutes or so. I want to get into this idea of syndication. Okay. You've had the opportunity to get some education, get some training, and participate in some of the syndications. But most recently, you're actually working with a partner and offered a syndication of a multifamily. Share a little bit about what that experience was like. Again, really dipping further out of professional practice. You're still, you know, very, very successful in the dentist world. But talking about this real estate, walk us through, what was that like to make the decision, get with someone that, okay, now I want to actually offer something as a syndication compared to participating? Share that if you don't mind.
No, absolutely. Well, the first thing I would say is that most people, doctors or, you know, high-income professionals, they make the mistake of thinking that, well, I want to do, they come to me and I want to do what you're doing. I want to, you know, sponsor some deals. And, you know, the limited partners in the syndication, they get the lion's share. If you're in the right one, they get the lion's share of the deal. And really, mm-hmm. what you're buying in a syndication, I mean, in all large real estate deals, almost 99.9% of them are all syndicated, which just means a group of investors are pull their money together to take over an asset. Now, most of us have jobs and we have responsibilities in our day-to-day 9-to-5. So what you want is an operator who that's their job. You know, and they make a little bit of money, you know, off of the deal, but they're really there to manage, you know, get the property manager going and manage the rehab, because you're basically, instead of doing a flip, well, the syndications that I've been in have been value add multifamily. So it's like, you know, instead of flipping one house, if you're doing 100 units, you're flipping 100, you know, and it takes time. But it's a project management. It's a big process, a lot of moving parts. But if you're in a dental practice or you're an accountant or, you know, whatever your day job is, you don't have time to deal with that thing. What you're buying in a syndication is you're leveraging someone else's time, you know, and you want them on there. Like my partner, Joe, we've got, close to 500 units, I think, in Lubbock, Texas, over three or four properties. And so he's down there all the time, you know, and just making things happen. But you know, some bad things happened. Like one day there was a truck that was delivering shingles when they were redoing the roof, and it, you know, caused some of the pipes to burst, you know. So do you want to be in your dental chair and saying, hey, what do you want us to do? You know, there's a pipe, you know, there's a water line break, you know, over there. And so you're buying someone else's time and you're leveraging, and you have, there's, you know, you can leverage, you know, things in life. You can leverage money, and everyone understands that, putting 20-25% down and, you know, borrowing the rest. And or you can, you know, you can leverage other people. You know, and that's the value in a, you know, in syndication, is having someone else, you know, do it. Actually, this one guy, now I'm threatening to get him to buy his own 50-unit property, because he keeps on saying, like, I want to do what you're doing. So I'm going to get him a 50-unit property, and he's worth about $1,000 an hour. And so he can, you know, deal with, you see what it's like, you know. And it's a great way.
Give him what he's asking for, huh?
What's that?
Kind of give him what he's asking for to see if, just kind of wake him up a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's too much. Well, Steve, I thank you for taking the time to break it down, because literally, even for those that are listening to this that use investor comps to actually identify projects, what we want to do is, even as a real estate investor, yes, you want to be active in your business, and then you want it to grow so that it actually functions on its own, where you're kind of closer to the top of the trees, and you have your team members, your contractors, your property managers out there that are working on the assets that you built in your portfolio. But overwhelmingly, even like myself, there's other deals that I want to participate in that I don't have the knowledge, the expertise, the bandwidth to be involved in. So I find people like Steve. Steve says, hey, I've got a syndication over here. These are the numbers on it based on your investment, what we expect the value to grow based on our discounted acquisition, and what you can expect in terms of your interest expense, interest return, as well as capital return over time. And when you've got someone that's like his partner Joe that's out there in the field covering all the bases, you don't have to worry about taking your eyes off of your business. You just watch the mailbox money come in, and watch more mailbox money come in, and more mailbox money come in. That's what this is really all about. But again, always use your investor comps report so you can know, either on single family, multifamily, or even those larger commercial projects, you can get a sense of how you're getting involved in that deal. Steve, this has been just a blessed time to care and share. I know we've touched on a number of different projects, a little bit about your walk in life, being in professional practice and finding your way, reading a book, Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, kind of moving forward, participating in some projects, rolling those funds over, getting in additional projects and what that's meant for you over time, and then parting up and actually offering a syndication out there. So you've had this wonderful growth. As we wrap up, what would be something that you would share? Just words of wisdom, lesson learned through your path, that would be really a solid nugget for those that are listening today.
I'll give two.
Okay.
Number one is retire along the way. You know, it's really important. Don't wait until you're, you know, try to save this big pot of money and think that you're going to start traveling when you're 60, 65 and start to enjoy the world. So number one, I'd say retire along the way. And the second one that I would say would be from the late Jim Rohn. He said something like, work harder on yourself than you do in your job. And you can make a fortune. So just always work hard on yourself.
Work harder on yourself. Plug it in there. I'll piggyback on that, because actually what I'm reading a book by Marshall Goldsmith right now, and the title of the book is What Got You Here Won't Get You There, which actually goes back to Stephen Covey. Stephen Covey shared this concept of the thinking that got you in a certain situation. You can't use that same thinking to get out of a situation. You've got to have a different set of ideas, different support network, different group. So overwhelmingly, those things are really cool. Retire along the way. And that doesn't mean go dance on the retirement that you're trying to create. You still have to manage that. You want to be able to dance a little bit with the focus on dancing a lot later on. And overwhelmingly, that's a great share from Jim Rohn in terms of working harder on yourself than your business. Steve, I can't thank you enough. We didn't get a chance to mention your lovely bride, Sona, and the joy of your life, your beautiful daughter, Sophie. And just she's becoming such a beautiful, I won't quite say young lady quite yet, but she's growing, coming through her elementary years, and is so bright and just a wonderful lady in terms of her smile and what she gives back to the world. Truly, you're a blessed guy having your lovely bride as Sophie to lighten up every day of your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good stuff. Well, I know we covered some things. At some point, I'm going to have to invite you back again so we can dig a little bit deeper. I hope you'll accept that invitation.
Anytime, MJ. Anytime.
All right. Everybody, thank you for being here on the Appraiser Secrets podcast, powered by Investor Comps. Without a doubt, make sure you always make a profit when you buy, knowing the best acquisition value and after-repair value for a piece of real estate. Definitely subscribe, like, leave a comment. If there's a topic you want us to cover in the near future, please share that. we'll delve into it and bring on the guest, or maybe we might even have you as a guest to expand all the topics that we can cover, so we know that we're always focused on valuation and taking that valuation-first approach to real estate. Other than that, God bless. Take good care. Steve, thank you again. We'll see everybody again real soon.
You've been listening to another episode of the Appraiser Secrets Podcast with Mark Jackson, the place to be to create your freedom lifestyle with more time off, security, and peace of mind. Find out more at appraisersecrets.com.